Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning, depending on what time you're listening. This is the Padres EVT podcast, episode 177. I'm Clark Farenthal, joined always by my co-host and creator of the East Village Times, James Clark. And also joining us today, a very special guest from MLB.com, MLB Pipeline, Sam Dykstra. Sam, we really appreciate you being here today, man. Really can't wait for us to talk about some Padres prospects. And again, really appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Definitely. So, you know, obviously with Sam on today, the first half of this show is going to really be concentrated on talking about the Padres farm system. Yeah. The farm year right underway, a couple games played throughout the system right now. Obviously, a lot of prospects to pay attention to. James, I'll let you go ahead and take the lead on the first guy you maybe want to ask Sam about. I'll let you take the floor on that.
Well, you know, first off, I'd love to know just quickly a little bit about Sam. Tell us, Sam, tell our viewers, you know, our listeners exactly about yourself and how you fell in love with the game of baseball.
Yeah. So I am officially a reporter for MLB Pipeline and MILB.com. I started this gig. Well, I started in this industry, I guess you could say, in March 2012. I graduated from Boston University, was looking for a sports journalism job and just applied everywhere. But baseball has always been my first love when it comes to sports. So I was particularly interested in working for MILB.com because there was an opening there. And then that was the first offer I got. They said, do you want to move to New York City and write about minor league baseball every night? And that was every 21-year-old kid's dream. So I jumped on that. And, you know, I'd just been slowly moving around, doing different things. Used to have a tool shed column. I co-host the show before the show, the official minor league baseball podcast. And now one of my jobs is to rank prospects. And
awesome.
I've really enjoyed digging into that aspect of it and getting, you know, my hands dirty in evaluation, not just writing. But it's all storytelling to me. I mean, that's what I love about baseball. Is it's
for sure
162 games a year to tell a story. And
you can feel the passion in your work and the effort that you put forth and you know, ranking these prospects and getting an idea of what their future holds. Because I know that's a tough task in itself, right?
Yeah. No, totally. And trying to get this stuff right. It is not an exact science, no matter what anybody tells you, no matter what anybody else thinks. This is not an exact science. But the closer thing you can get to the truth, the better.
Definitely. Well, let's talk about someone who's quite polarizing and someone that just recently came across the Padres top 30 list and top 100 list. And that's Leo Dallas DeVeers. What is it about him that you're seeing early that's just getting everyone so excited?
Yeah, I think the big thing for me is, you know, hearing about some of the reports right after he signed. And obviously, that signing bonus is going to pique your interest. And he was atop a lot of international signing lists, all that kind of stuff, signing for north of $4 million. But then talking to people in the Padres, and they say, like, we've watched this guy go against arms that have been at high A, double A, and he's not swinging and missing. And he's a switch hitter. The fact that he's doing this already, and he's not really swinging and missing. He's also spitting on pitches just outside the zone. You know, with all the devices and technology that exist now, you can tell a guy's plate discipline, whether an ump's back there or not. And it grades out really well so far for DeVries. You add that to the mix that the people I talk to keep coming back to, that he has a basketball background and he played a lot of point guard and he carries that athleticism to his work at shortstop. Maybe he doesn't stick there long term. Maybe he ends up at second base too, but it's still an up the middle talent. So you got a switch hitter who can hit the ball really well, is making really good swing decisions already at 17 years old, and he's probably going to grow into power and he's going to keep that plus speed. It's a real five-tool talent for DeVries. I mean, we just added him to our top 100 before he's played a game based on those reports. He's already stateside. We know the Padres get aggressive. They like to do this. They did this with Ethan Salas last year.
Yeah.
But they do it because they have the prospects to do it with. And DeVries certainly fits that mold.
Definitely. And I wanted to ask you on DeVries too. I think one thing, just looking at him, arm strength, it's solid right now. Do you feel like that's something that over time can grow as, you know, matures, or do you feel like that's going to kind of stay where it's at moving forward?
I mean, you could add velocity insofar as that works. I mean, that's something he could grow into. It's not something we see a ton of at the minor league level. Guys aren't, unless it's like a real negative, we're not necessarily seeing guys go from like a 55 to an 80. I don't think he's going to be Mason Wynn at shortstop by any means, but it seems to be an arm that's works. I don't think that's why he's going to move to second base. Okay. If he ends up having to move to second base, it's probably because he's going to fill out a little bit more, maybe slow down a tick. But like the arm, I've heard good things about, and it should be at least above average, probably for the duration of his time as a prospect.
Definitely. And the next guy I wanted to ask you about too, another player who has just absurd plate recognition. I mean, just field the zone. That's Ethan Salas. He's the number one ranked prospect in the Padres system right now. I wanted to ask you about the power that he brings, because I think for being so young, last season you saw a lot of gap to gap. You saw how quick the hands were. Going forward, I think he has 60 grade power is what it's been put at. Do you think that's something that will play higher at a game level and just continue to go higher and higher as he progresses? Where do you kind of see that power going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all about projection. That's, I know different sites do it different ways about like current power versus future projection. We just go off future projection. So that's 60. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be plus power in the end. I think that he's going to be a candidate by the time he makes the majors and is in his mid 20s to hit 20, 25, maybe even 30 homers comfortably per season. To do that at the catching position is obviously huge. And you look at this Padres system as it currently stands, I think he has the best power projection of that group. The fact that he's doing this already at 17 years old, and he's about to turn 18 this summer, is really promising, because you know he's only going to get stronger from here. And the fact that it played so well while still getting used to playing the catching position two, three times a week, they did a good job of protecting him last year. But I think he's only going to get stronger. The ball's only going to go farther. And like I said, I think that that plus power is going to stick.
Nice. Definitely. And then on the defensive side too, I think when I watch him, it's really noticeable how athletic of a receiver he is of the ball. Talk to me about those defensive skills that you've seen, because I think so much now in modern day baseball, for the catching position at least, is focused on that defensive end side of the ball. For him, what have you seen, the receiving, the blocking, encouraging from your eyes?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, I remember getting video last year after he signed, and we were trying to figure out, kind of like we were doing with DeVries, where do you put this guy? Because he signed for a lot of money, but he hasn't debuted yet. And a source sent me video of him catching Yu Darvish. At just 16 years old, and you could see how confident Darvish was in working with Salas. This was not just a novelty act like I'll do this for the organization. He was kind of like bopping his head and being like, all right, this guy's picking it really well, he's moving well back there, I feel comfortable with this guy back there. And any pitcher you talk to at any level, they'll say, you know, when the guy back there doesn't know what he's doing, and you're going to become less confident, and you're not going to try to bounce balls or get in swings and misses out of the zone. You're going to kind of stick to the zone, because that's the only way you're going to get a strike. Salas is the other way. He makes pitchers more confident. Guys love working with him. Dylan Lesko talked about this over the weekend when those two were combining on a one hitter for Wayne. Those guys are roommates now. I mean, he is bilingual. He works with pitchers really well. It's not just the physical tools. It's the maturity level as well. I think he could catch any level of baseball right now and not have a problem.
Definitely.
At what point do you think that Salas will debut with the Padres? I know that's an interesting question.
It is an interesting question. We pegged him for an ETA of 2025, which in a vacuum seems incredibly aggressive for that position. Because any other catcher, I talk to organizations, they always caution like, well, catching takes longer development. And I get that. I totally get that. You're trying to do so many different jobs. But he's done so many of them so well. The fact that he got to Double A last year, the fact that, let's be honest, this is the Padres, like I said earlier, they are going to get aggressive with their guys if they think they're ready and can help at all. I think he could be up by the second half of next year, which would be his 19th birthday, which would be, that's like a Pudge Rodriguez style timeline. I'm not saying
but
just
unreal. Unreal. To be a teenager catching in the major leagues, that's wow.
Certainly. No, I agree. And I wanted to ask you just a little bit about that too, because the Padres in these last really year, maybe extending beyond that, have been aggressive in terms of how they progress their prospects. From what you've seen, do you feel like that's been beneficial to them, the aggressiveness and the way they've progressed the system? Or is it just kind of codependent from player to player that you've seen on how they handle it?
I think it's completely player to player. I mean, they are willing to get aggressive with a lot of their guys, but look at the ones they're picking, right? It's Jackson Merrill, who I remember even last midseason, I was having debates with people in the game of like, who is the better prospect, Salas or Merrill? And you could get six votes one way and four another, and that's how he ended up Salas. But like, Merrill had a lot of support in the game. That's why they push him. Fernando Tatis Jr., obviously superstar level, willing to push him. Robbie Snelling passing every test last year. But then you look at like Graham Pauly, who everybody now thinks of like, oh, they pushed him to the majors for his second full season. He started out last year at single A. Like, this wasn't the guy they were supremely aggressive with from the jump last year. Even Jacob Marcy, you know, he had a really strong year last year. He's opening up at double A. He's not at El Paso like Paulie is now as getting sent down. So it is case by case. They've just had a lot of really good high ceiling types the last few years. And those are the ones they're willing to ride really hard.
Definitely. That makes a lot of sense.
You know, I'd love to talk about Snell, and you mentioned his name earlier, someone who's really progressed. I mean, 20 years old, lefty, awesome pitch mix. What is it about Snelling that is it just the bulldog attitude? Is it just what is it that you like about him?
Yeah, I think you stole the word right out of my mouth. It's that bulldog mentality that everybody talks about with him. He's got a football background. He was a linebacker in high school too, and he's willing to go right after guys. Where I think a lot of times pitchers early, they're either trying to show stuff or they're trying to show command, and it can be a tough balance. He has that good Venn diagram right in the middle where he's going to throw strikes. He's going to, he's going to put it right on the edge. He's going to give you an opportunity to swing the bat, but the stuff is good enough that you're going to swing and miss. And, he's not going to get in his own way by walking a bunch of guys, or at least he hasn't so far. We'll see what happens against more patient double A and triple A batters this season, if he does see triple A. But I think it's that willingness to go right after batters and the confidence in his stuff and the quality of the stuff. It's just the really, really good mix for a 20-year-old left-hander.
Right.
Definitely. And I wanted to ask you on Snelling too. I think when I watch him, one of the things that really stands out is his ability to tunnel his pitches. I think he tunnels the ball really well in terms of going from his fastball to that kind of spike curveball. For moving forward for a guy like Snelling, how important is that, and how much more projectable does it make him because he's able to create that tunneling effect on his pitches?
Yeah, I mean, that's huge. I mean, that's so much of what we talk about now in the game is it's not just like what is your horizontal break or your vertical break or all that kind of stuff. It's, are you tipping your pitches? Because you'll see that a lot in the majors of like, how were guys able to hit that? And I'm not going into like an Astros trash can situation. Like the major leaguers will really figure out if you are 2 inches lower on your slider than you are on your fastball, that's a tell for them. And if you can tunnel those well and stay with the same arm slot, same with the same release point, like Snelling does, that's going to give you an upper hand. And the fact that he's left-handed is another really big point in his favor.
Also too, and I believe it was about midway or maybe the start of 2023, he started tinkering and using a slider more. And now that slider obviously is big against left-handers. With adding another pitch like that to the arsenal, does that just increase the number of strikeouts he can get, just be more effective against those left-handed hitters?
Yeah, definitely. And one thing that intrigues me with him is him, you watch him pitch and you're like, that looks awful like a slider. And he talks about it as a curveball. Mm-hmm. And he can just manipulate that breaking ball really well. I kind of think of it as just a breaking ball that he manipulates. It's not so much here's one bucket and here's another bucket. Sometimes it looks like a curve. Sometimes it looks like a slider. Sometimes it's a little slurvy, which I think used to be a bad word. And now it's like, well, if you got enough horizontal and vertical break, as long as the pitch works, it works. Who cares what bucket it goes into? So he's kind of a perfect example of that. But he's found something that works really well, and that's not easy to do with a breaking pitch. Normally guys want to be consistent with it, but if you can manipulate it like he can, that's a huge plus.
Definitely.
Awesome. Let's stick to the left-handed theme here and talk about Jagger Haynes, someone who's has health issues, but was up to 97. Some reports have him. Give me a little bit about Haynes and what kind of upside do you see in him? Do you see a potential mid-rotation type starter, or what do you see from Haynes?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to say he could be a future starter. It's just because of the injuries. You look at last year, it was blister and shoulder stuff, which blisters are just freak injuries. But shoulder is obviously more concerning. He just hasn't pitched that much. Going back to the 2020 fifth round was when he was taken. I like the fastball. I like the curveball. I had him up to 97, like you were saying. So the stuff is there. He's only 21 years old, but I think this year is going to be his Rule 5 year, 2021. 20, yeah, so he'll be Rule 5 eligible. We're kind of pushing the envelope now of like he needs to start pitching, and he's opening up at High A Fort Wayne, having only thrown 25 and a third innings in the minor leagues so far. I mean, that's difficult to do. I think the stuff is there. I think right now you have to kind of project him as maybe a relief arm, just somebody who can kind of lean into that fastball and curveball. And if he becomes a number four starter, kind of treat that as a pleasant surprise. But the rubber's hitting the road a little bit for Jagger Haynes.
Yeah,
definitely. I wanted to bring us back to the right-handed side of pitching, though. Obviously, the other big pitching prospect name in San Diego system is Dylan Lesko. I believe you put down he had the best changeup in the system. Obviously, I think it was before Drew Thorpe left. Even still then, I think it was better than Thorpe's, at least in my mind. From what you've seen out of Lesko, I know he added a slider or two to the arsenal. Command's been a little bit off here as of recent. What's his projectability like, and what do you see from him moving forward this season?
Yeah, I mean, this year is going to be a fascinating one because you look at the control numbers last year and they weren't great for somebody who had maybe even plus control in high school. But every source I talked to said, well, this is just Tommy John stuff. This is him just coming back. We're happy with the quality of the stuff. He'll learn to command as he adds innings, and it hasn't happened yet. I mean, that first start, it was great to have no hits, but it also the walks were certainly there. So it's going to be something we're going to have to keep an eye on moving forward with him. But yeah, adding that slider, making it look, I don't know if you guys saw a video of that when he was going up against.
Yeah, he was going against like Abrams and guys like that.
Major leaguers, and just making it look easy. I think it was in Atlanta where that happened. He seems to have taken to that really well. He has a feel for spin on top of the plus changeup, and the velocity is certainly there for him. So I think he's got the upside of like a number two starter. I think he has higher upside than Snelling, to be honest with you, because of the quality of pitches. It's just we haven't seen it like Snelling. He doesn't have the body of professional work. And until he starts pitching six innings and only walking one guy, the control issues are still in the back of your head.
Certainly. Yeah. And I wanted to ask you, too, just keeping on that slider. I think from watching that video that said it had about, you know, like 13 inches or something like that, a horizontal break, vertical break on there. It's a really good pitch that moves. It's going to be, I feel like, extremely effective against right-handers, not only just for strikeout pitches, but helping him induce more ground balls. For that pitch right there in particular, do you think that's one that he'll maybe use more as an out pitch, or do you think he'll stick with that changeup as to be kind of his main strikeout pitch?
I think the strikeout, you stick with your bread and butter when it's this good, but that's a weapon that can be used against lefties. The slider is big for me because when you look at his pitches, it was fastball, curveball, changeup, and a lot of those are moving vertically. He needed something that was going to go horizontally, because if you're just working north-south, guys can sit on that a little bit easier. So having something that was moving to the glove side will be better against righties for sure. You know, the changeup's moving arm side. Now he's got something going to the left too. I think that only makes him more diverse and a better pitcher overall.
Definitely.
Great stuff. Great stuff. You know, Ethan Salas is obviously the cream of the crop of the catching prospects for the Padres, but I'd like to talk a little bit about Brandon Valenzuela, someone who I've liked for a long time. Great defender, switch hitter, takes a walk, gets on base generally. The bat has been a concern, but you know, I think he's Rule 5 eligible coming up next season as well. Give me a little bit about Valenzuela and whether or not he'll be able to make it to the majors.
Yeah, I definitely think he has the chance to be at least a number two catcher for somebody, if not the Padres. I mean, you look at the amount of catching talent they now have in that system. But I liked Brandon Valenzuela last year. I got a little aggressive with him at midseason, and then he didn't play much in the second half because of an MCL issue. But, you know, I think the bat can be there for him. I really like his floor as a defensive catcher, like you said. He's a pretty good framer. He moves pretty well for his size back there. Switch hitter is certainly going to help him, you know, get into the lineup somehow. Yeah. It's not great power, but enough of an arm to limit the running game, which is huge now. That's one thing we have to consider is the more guys run, the more valuable a catching arm is going to be. So I think he could be a plus defensive catcher, above average throwing arm, and just enough bat to get, you know, 1, 2, 3 starts a week at the major league level.
Okay. Definitely. You know, and then I wanted to go back to the pitching end really quick. I think for one of the more underrated arms in the prospect in the system, Ryan Burgett, I think the fastball is electric on his end. I want to say in his first start too, 55 pitches, 44 of them he threw for strikes. I think he had, what was it? Maybe like 5 or 6 strikeouts in that game. Slider bites really hard for him too. What do you feel like is going to be a big season for him? Do you think he'd be one of those guys with the stuff that he has could be a quick riser?
Yeah, I think the thing for Berger is like the opportunities are there. I mean, we have him at number 10 right now, which is one spot below Marcy, and people are really excited about Marcy. And I don't want Berger to get lost on that either. You look at his numbers last year, 2.73 ERA over 105 innings. The big thing is getting over that 120 inning hump, I think, for him.
Yeah.
He's been at 105 last year and 103 the year before. But I really like the fastball. I really like the slider. I think the slider is a true plus pitch with good sweep and drop. And if, you know, you get those two pitches, I think it's a little bit easier now to stick as a major league starter with just two really good pitches than it's ever been, considering guys are doing five and dives more than ever. So he could kind of fit that really well. But yeah, if he can get that control even closer to average, and he didn't walk anybody in his first start, which is a promising sign. I mean, that's how you get closer to better than five and dive type. So yeah, I think this is a big year for Berger. He should be knocking on the door. I could certainly see him debuting in the second half, if not a little earlier.
And again, just like with him, I know he's starting right now. Is he a guy that San Diego might say and say, hey, the stuff's so good, there's so much induced vertical break on that fastball, the slider is such a plus pitch, that maybe they look at him at some point as a bullpen option? Or do you think they're really going to want to stick with him as being a starter for right now?
Well, I think you look at his age, him being 24, that's when those conversations really start. It depends on, you know, where the availability is. You look at Iriarte last year.
Yeah.
And they moved him into the bullpen just because they were entering the stretch run and they were like, you're one of our best arms. We want you in the majors. That could happen with Berger. Like, they could get to late June and be like, all right, we're kind of hanging in here, and the best opening we have for you is in the bullpen. So let's try that. We can transition you back to starting if we need to, like they did with Iriarte later in the year. So the potential is there. I mean, you get him up in the majors and throw that fastball and slider, I'm sure it's going to work in the sixth, seventh inning pretty quickly. I'm usually an advocate of like keeping guys as starters for as long as you can, especially somebody like him who hasn't proven it over the long term. He hasn't got, like I said before, he hasn't got that 120 season inning season yet. But I, you know, when you're at double A, when you're 24 years old, that's when those tough conversations happen. And I'm sure he'd take any route to the majors that he can get.
Definitely.
For sure. You know, let's talk about another big arm in the system, and that's Isaiah Lowe. Clark and I had a chance to talk to him last week at in Lake Elsinore. Impressive young man. He seems to really kind of be focused this year on progressing. What is it about Isaiah Lowe that you like?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's another guy who's fastball slider. I mean, he's not a huge guy at 6'1", but it's a mid-90s fastball. It's pretty explosive, and it's got a little bit of tailing action too. So there's a nice movement on that pitch. He just needs to pitch, man. Like, that's the big thing for Isaiah Lowe. He's kind of the right-handed Jagger Haynes in many ways. I mean, putting those trying to figure out who was going to rank above whom in that was a tough exercise for me. And I think I gave Haynes the upper hand just because he's left-handed, to be honest with you. You could go either which way on those two types. But, yeah, Isaiah Lowe needs to pitch this year. I think the stuff is there. If he pitches 100 innings, he could jump 10 spots. He's at 25 right now. He'd be a top 15 prospect in the system. We just need to see it consistently.
Yeah. And one thing I wanted to ask you about too with Lowe, I know like he's not the biggest guy as you pointed out, but I think when you watch him, and especially after being up close to him, those arms are really long. And I feel like that gives him a lot of extra extension off the mound, you know, and it provides that late life that you talked about. For going up against hitters, how important is it kind of have that late life and that movement that his pitch and fastball sort of has to help you progress through the levels and just stand out a little bit more?
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, extension is one of the buzzwords of pitching nowadays, right? Like, the more extension you can get, even if you're throwing 92, it's going to look like 96, 97. And if you're doing that with some movement, it's even tougher if you're continually pegging the top of the zone, like I think Lowe can do. So, yeah, I mean, just because his size isn't great doesn't mean he can't make the most of that fastball. And it's something worth watching moving forward.
Definitely. And another name in Lake Elsinore I wanted to ask about, too, kind of an intriguing guy, Carson Montgomery. I mean, before we were talking about in 2020, this was a guy that I think a lot of people pegged close to being a top 75, top 50 prospect coming out in that draft class. He opts to go to Florida State, comes out after 3 years. Fastball velocity is good, but he got knocked around a lot in college, and he started to have some struggles with command. But I still think when you look at him, the raw materials, may as you want to call it, is there's a solid arm talent there, essentially. What do you see out of possibly from Montgomery? And, you know, how does he get back to just commanding the zone better and going right after guys? And how important is that going to be in making sure he continues to progress through the system?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing for me with him is, like you said, the velocity is there. At Florida State, he was touching 97 last spring and averaging around 93, but it was a little bit more of a sinking profile, which I don't know. Like I grew up in the age of Derek Lowe, and I think the sinker used to be really king, but now it's closer to that dead zone fastball that is very easy to hit for pro hitters. But yeah, Padres people I talked to, they were always kind of slipping his name in even before some of these trades they made of like, keep an eye on Carson Montgomery. Like we really like him. We think there's something there. And if we just get him into our pipeline, then we can work with this. So like the cutter, the slider, he's got two different breaking ball shapes that can certainly work. If they improve the induced vertical break on that fastball, give it a little bit more run or a little bit more ride, then there's something there. I mean, sending him to Lake Elsinore, I think, is a good assignment. Normally, I like to see my college pitchers go to high A, especially if they're coming out of a big program like he is. But just let him dominate there, even though it's the Cal League. Like, and we'll see how it goes. He walked five in his first start. But let him really post there. Get that confidence back. Prove that the stuff can play. And they maybe have gotten something here because he was somebody who was looking much more like a reliever throughout his college career, but they could get a starter here. If you know, pro development is different from college development for
sure. You know, let's stick to Lake Elsinore theme and talk about Dylan Head, someone who's ultra athletic, needs at bats. There's a lot of potential there, a great defender, great speed. What is it about Head that you see, and what is it that he needs to work on the most in your estimation?
Yeah. I mean, with Head, I really am excited to see what he can do this year. I really like the additions they made in the draft between him and Homer Bush Jr., especially like we were talking about earlier with it's a speedy game now, and getting somebody who was an 80 grade runner in Dylan Head, and Homer Bush Jr. was a 70 grade runner coming out of the draft. And everything I hear is he's gotten faster in the offseason, which sounds insane, but he's done that. Those guys can maybe impact a game in a way that, you know, we just saw Victor Scott II make the opening day roster for the Cardinals because of some injuries, but also because of the impact he can have on the speed side. If you can turn a single into a double, not necessarily by just hitting the ball in the gap, but just getting on base and stealing second, that's huge. So I think Head could be that guy. The big thing for me with him is 6 foot, which isn't small by any means, but not a huge dude in center field. And he needs to add power. I mean, it's 40 grade power right now. What is that going to play like? Is he just going to be a slap and dash hitter who's getting on base, you know, at a 360, 370 clip and stealing bags for extra bases instead of actually getting extra base hits? I think that's going to be something we're going to have to, it's not going to necessarily be answered this year. It's something we're going to have to monitor moving forward. He only turned 19 in October. He's got plenty of development ahead of him, but that, I think that's the biggest knock right now. Cause you look at the rest of the profile, it's 55, 60s across the board. If he hits for power, even a little bit, we're talking about a top 100 guy for sure.
Nice.
Definitely. And another guy from single, I want to keep with the theme here that has really stuck out just from his first two outings so far this season, Bradley Rodriguez. I think that's a guy from what I've seen, I believe in his outing the other day, two innings, I think he generated by my count 11 whiffs. I mean, he was nasty. Fastball sitting up there 100 miles an hour. There was a sequence he went, I forget, it was some left-hander that was in there. Fastball, and then just threw an off-the-table changeup, splitter, or whatever, and guy had no chance. He reminds me a little bit of Andres Munoz when he was coming up, just sort of the velocity and the two-pitch combination. What do you think San Diego has with this kid right now? And again, with kind of his where he's at, how fast can he sort of rise through this system?
Yeah, I mean, he's a fascinating one because I remember him getting added to the spring breakout roster and just being like, oh, so they're going to put him in this big game, which like, part of that, you fill out the roster just to get some arms in and guys who are available to throw on that day. But the other part of it was like, all right, let me look into this. And you'd see the heat and it's like, it's absolutely there. So now I'm intrigued. I want to see what it's going to be moving forward. Cause especially when you know, this is a heck of a time to have this conversation. I realize that, but so much of the conversation around baseball right now is guys throwing harder and then breaking. And he's already gone through that process. So is he in that kind of mix with Haynes and Lowe of like off injured, but the stuff is there, or is this something he can maintain into May, into June, and then he becomes an even more interesting prospect if he's, if the heater's working as well as it has so far. So he's definitely got my attention. He had my curiosity. Now he has my attention, but we'll see how this holds for the coming weeks.
Definitely. And let me ask you this too. It's not necessarily much on prospects. It is just on a general philosophy for San Diego right now. Obviously with the injuries that have happened around Major League Baseball, you know, how important, how much value does San Diego system has, because it has this bevy of pitching opportunities right now. They've done a good job at developing, you know, does that give them maybe capital to move around, or just really how valuable is the amount of pitching that they have currently locked up in their farm system?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at who they have, I mean, getting somebody like Snelling at double A, anybody at double A, especially in this system, is eligible to be called up soon. That's just the way the game kind of works now. That gap isn't as big as it maybe it once was, but it's interesting to me how teams are going to treat this moving forward. I think the biggest thing they want to do is like acquire pitching depth, because the more arms you have, the better chance of like one of these guys turning into a future ace. So the fact that they have, you know, Snelling, Lesko, all these guys, Adam Mazur, who we haven't talked about yet, but like has really good control, and I feel very confident can be a starter because of that control. They're giving themselves at least opportunities, you know, lottery tickets to kind of crack that rotation. We'll see how things go from here. You know, they acquired Drew Thorpe and then they traded Drew Thorpe for Dylan Cease. I mean, like all of these guys are chips in their own way. I'm not saying all of these guys are going to stick necessarily, especially in AJ Preller's system, but they have enough now that I feel pretty comfortable, or they should feel at least pretty comfortable with where their pitching situation is.
Definitely.
It's pretty remarkable how quickly that the Padres have been able to revamp the farm system. I know they were top farm system 2016, 17, 18. They were still up there, and it just seems like they're trending upwards again with a relevant major league team as well. So it's exciting for Padre fans for sure. We're not quite prospect watching like we were before, but it's still interesting to see the amount of names that are out there. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah. You know, a lot of that just comes from scouting. A lot of that comes from development. I mean, you can bring in the right names and it doesn't necessarily mean they're all going to hit the way that they have. Even Jackson Merrill this time last year was off to a rough start and they still really trusted him. And now he is where he is. Yeah. It's a lot of credit to the way that organization has developed guys and turning some of these players into legit prospects, like a Graham Pauly, like a Jacob Marcy, like a Nathan Martorella. Yeah. That 2022 draft class, I think, was a really special one just because of how deep it was.
And there's so many Padre prospects or former Padre prospects scattered around the league. I know the Brewers have a lot. The Mariners have a lot. There's a lot on the Pirates. I mean, it's impressive for me being an older Padre fan who they never did anything international. They wasted number one picks for a long time. It's just exciting to see young players, homegrown players, develop in the system and have a potential to, make their mark in the major league area.
Yeah, totally. And I don't think this whole, like, Leo Dallas DeVries and Ethan Salas, like, they got the number one guys on the international market 2 years in a row. I don't think that's, like, a strategy you can rely on every year moving forward. Yeah. But, I mean, it's a heck of a one. Like, you're putting a lot of eggs into two baskets, and those are two very talented baskets so far.
Yeah,
definitely. Well, Sam, I believe you have covered just about every single base that we could have asked you for today. The insight was phenomenal to hear out of your mouth, just as it is always here to read any of your stuff for MILB or the MLB pipeline. So we really appreciate you coming on, man, and spending some time with us.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. I really enjoyed this.
Definitely. Well, hopefully we can do it again sometime. But Sam, really appreciate it. Thank you, man.
Thank you. That was good, man.
Man, what a treat. What a treat. If you're looking for great insight, that's right it from Sam, man. You cannot ask for much more than that.
Yeah, right from what you read, right to the from the guy's mouth. I mean, and we could have gone on and talked about Mazur. We could have talked about, you know, Rosman Verdugo. We could have talked about so many other players, but there's time restraint. We got to who we got to. Mm-hmm. It's just valuable information, though, isn't it, Clark?
No, I definitely agree. I think, you know, obviously, as someone who enjoys evaluating prospects myself, to hear Sam's insight is just like a whole nother level. I think his attention to detail on all of these guys is fantastic. The insight that he has is really good. Obviously there's names I wish we could have gotten to, but you know, I could have sat there and asked about Humberto Cruz, but there's a limited amount of time we got, and hey, maybe we can have him on again sometime soon. Cause that was really cool to hear all that. And again, to Sam, we appreciate you being on, man. That was awesome.
For sure. And, you know, it's I always say that it's nice to get a perspective of a national writer, not necessarily someone who loves the Padres, loves Padre prospects, wants to gush about Padre prospects.
Yeah.
We want the reality of who the Padre prospect is. We want to learn who they are. We want to know what their upside is. We want to know what their ability is. And you got to have an outside source, someone who's just is going to be just candid and is just going to tell it like it is. And Sam was definitely that way. He's happy and content with a lot of the Padre pitching in the minors. And I think we are too. Big years for Haynes and Lowe's going to have to progress. I mean, it's nice when you hear that thing and you can kind of just, you're right. I can sit here and sugarcoat a Padre prospect all I want, but you are right. That's the reality of the situation.
No, I 100% agree. I think everything that he had to say today was – there's no bias in it. I think, like, again, if I talk about Padres prospects, I have almost a little bit of an inherent bias because that's the team that I root for. You want to see those guys succeed because they are in your team system. A guy like Sam, you eliminate that. You get the objective plain eye. So as much as we try to do that when we talk about any of these players, bringing in that outside idea or bringing out the outside name to come talk about it, especially with someone who has so much knowledge and experience as he does, it is just fantastic. And that was awesome to do. It was awesome to hear. And I think really the takeaway for myself as a Padres fan is, again, there's guys that we talked about, there's question marks, but there's a lot of encouraging signs still. And this is a system that's not only top heavy with the names that they have, but there is very plus depth in the lower parts of the system that can move up. Like him saying that if Lowe stays healthy, he can move up to 10 spots, be a 15 guy. Right? And talking about Carson Montgomery, that he feels like the people have said that they might have someone there. Those are two young guys they took later rounds. I think they were both past the 10th round, if I want to say. If you get something out of that, that's huge. And the guy like Bradley Rodriguez, he has his attention. Like, that's big to say. Bradley's been fantastic in his outings. If you watched him the other day, 11 whiffs in 2 innings is no joke.
No.
In my mind, he looks
triple
like
on digits basketball. I mean, that's
so it's great to hear. It's maybe just a little bit of reinsurance almost that there is a lot of talent still in this Padre system, and it's not completely misconstrued to think that.
Yeah, for sure. And MLB Pipeline does a great job of putting this stuff out there, and everyone digests this stuff and welcomes it and loves it. So, this is going to be the first stop of our prospect podcast that we have scheduled. We got a couple more guests lined up. Some maybe different ideas, some different websites, if you will, because that's what I like to do. I like to get an idea of who these players really are and get some different perspectives, because we can talk to the next guy and he might have a whole different idea of who Isaiah Lowe is or Carson Montgomery is. And maybe somewhere in the middle is the truth. And that's what we're searching for, because like Sam said, this is not an exact science by any means, folks. This is really tough to predict what these players' future is. And a lot of it is just looking into your crystal ball, honestly.
I agree. And I think, it's so true. I mean, again, everyone knows it in a way, but there is no exact science for how to evaluate prospects. But I also think it is so interesting that so many other guys, like the evaluation process, everyone gives it. Like, I'm sure Sam's evaluation process is different than yours or I's in some way.
Exactly.
And, but again, that just goes back to how important it is to get perspectives on, these players from people who are either thinking in different ways than you, or just in Sam's case, an expert on the matter. So it's the perfect way to go about it.
For sure. Valuable information. You just got to kind of digest it and kind of think about it. And we'll all see what the true outcome for these players is. It'd be interesting for me to go back and see some of these podcasts that I did in 2015, 16 with some of these prognosticators and see what we talked about and where these players are. I know Luis Arias was talked about endlessly in the beginning of our podcast. Is that the next Jose Altuve? Well, it certainly wasn't the next Jose Altuve, although he's had a respectable major league career and it's still ongoing. But, you just never know with these players. You really don't. You never know. I mean, look at Emmanuel Clase that came out of nowhere and dominate. I mean, you just never know. I think we should talk a little bit about maybe the Padres.
Yes, current I think we should.
Before we get out of here, we got a couple minutes. Yeah. That Cubs series so far has been been a roller coaster ride.
It has been the definition of a roller coaster. Yes, that could not be more up and down. And so for game one, just to go back to it, as everyone remembers, San Diego falls in the 8-0 hole. They breathe a little bit back of life into themselves at Jay Cronenworth's 2-run home run to right field, who, by the way, to Jay Cronenworth, unbelievable start to the season.
Yeah, you cannot,
in my mind, compliment Jake enough for what he's done for this team. If they didn't have him, I don't really know where they would be right now, considering how much of a mainstay he's been in the middle of the lineup. But then they continue to chug. They get, you know, a couple more runs. Bogaerts at the home run. Kim has a 2-run triple. One thing I really noticed in that 7-run inning, I think it was Profar, Kim, and Machado all, and I could be off on this, all swung at first pitches back to back to back practically. And I've taken a note of this, actually, and I know the offense has had its struggles, but last season the Padres ranked, I believe, 31st in first pitch swing percentage last season. This year, I think they're up to 14th. Okay. I've asked for a little bit more of aggressiveness, so they've at least responded with that. But to get back to the game itself, Tatis obviously has a monumental home run, and Suarez closes out the game. I mean, for myself, that was a great feeling after that game, no?
Right. No, yeah. That's what, you know, at when it was 8-0, I'm tweeting here going, this offense is horrible. You know, what are we going to do? What's going on? And I guess that's what woke them up. I mean, I don't know.
Motivated themselves.
Any means, I don't think that, the rally ends this offensive doldrums that we're going to deal with this team, but it's nice to see a spark of life from this team, because that game was essentially over. There was no coming back from that. And that's the kind of thing that builds chemistries on a team that is looking for some, that's kind of has a new look to it, has new characters, and is trying to find an identity, if you will. It was a great win, but then you follow it up with Tuesday's loss and I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, it's the nature of baseball. It's like life. It goes up and down. You win games, you lose games. You're not going to win them all. You're not going to win 80-90% of your games. It happens. You will lose. And when you lose, you will magnify those losses. And I don't know, Clark.
I'll say for myself too, you know, I really hoped, and I felt like I said this so many times last season, too, the same thing back in 2023. But the team comes out, has what feels like a moment or a game that you think is going to turn the tide of how things go.
Yeah.
And, you know, Monday's game, I thought that was going to be, you erase the 8-0 deficit. Ties the largest comeback in franchise history. The emotion shown from Tatis, the emotion in the crowds, the way everyone's feeling. The sense is that next game, you feel like you almost have to, like, there's no way that they don't come out here and continue on that momentum. They have all of it. They just took all of the air out of the Cubs balloon. And somehow, some way, they come out the next day and it's just flat. And it's frustrating. Offensively at Musgrove, like, I get it. Obviously, Cola came in and gave the grand slam, but he was cruising until the third time around. You want to see him stay out there and do better. But I mean, again, like, there's just some days, especially too, where I sit there and say, can the offense just pick up the pitching staff? Can you just do it? They did it for Darvish the other day, but yesterday I was really hoping, hey, they're in this 5-run hole. Can they do it again? Right. They didn't, but it just comes back to the same theme of, like, they get so high and it feels like this has to be the spark for moving forward. And then it's just this drop off again. And it's so tough to watch at times. And it's mind boggling too, to an extent.
Yeah, the game is all about momentum, and it really it's about taking advantage of certain situations. And you're right. After a big win on Monday, you wanted to go out Tuesday and perform well. I mean, the beginning of the game was, you know, it was a tight game. It's a scoreless game, but you expect offense to pick it up. I mean, Bogaerts leads off with a base hit, or it gets on second base. Tatis flies out to center, and Bogaerts is thrown out, trying to advance to third base from Bellinger. I mean, I don't want to say that was a bad move. Maybe you should have tagged up. It's just when you have offensive issues, things are just like under a huge magnifying glass, and you just look at certain, you're like, what is this guy doing swinging here? What is this guy looking, thinking here? And it's just a sense of comfort that kind of needs to come over this team. I don't know what it is. And again, we're going to talk about the bottom of the lineup. It's just, I don't know. It's just not structured like you'd like to see, but
yeah,
they're making the best out of what they have.
I think one thing that was, again, frustrating too with last night facing Chicago, Ben Brown, who pitched, to his credit, he pitched well. Yeah. But it was a similar theme of what was Ben Brown throwing yesterday? Right. What was he throwing all day? He threw two pitches. He threw fastball and a knuckle curve. There were so many pitches, middle, in. I get it's 97. And the stuff graded out okay. It was a 107 stuff plus on fastball. That's good. There were too many pitches, fastballs, in the middle of the plate that they didn't do damage on. And that continues to baffle me.
Yeah.
Because I understand it. Hitting, I have played in the college. I know hitting a fastball is not hard.
Oh, yeah.
It ate my lunch, believe me. Yeah. But golly, when you see those 96, 97, you're just like, we crush the mistakes a little bit more.
I think it's more of the fact that they're not even flinching at them. They're not even offering at them. They're not loading up and ready to hit that. It's just, they take it and you're just like, you know, what are you looking for? You know, like fastball center cut. And like you mentioned, the velocity is good, but you should at least be offering at it. One thing's if you're late and, you know, you can get your timing adjusted off of that, but to just sit there and take it and then expect to offer at it and be on time is just unrealistic. You do need to time this hitter or this pitcher, and you need to be aggressive in order to do that. I don't know. I really don't know.
Whiffed last night on 28% of the pitches that Ben Brown threw. He had 28% whiff rate last night. That's too high for a guy like Ben Brown. I could be wrong, but I mean, he's 24 years old. I think he might have made some appearances last year, maybe, but this is a guy who's essentially a rookie.
You know, and honestly, the Padres seem to have issues with pitchers who they don't have a lot of information on.
Yes.
And that's troubling, because there's got to be information on Brown somewhere. You got to have advanced scouts. You got to have someone who's seen him in the minors. You got to have someone who has some information on him, some analytics, something. You can't just go out there the first time and expect to perform against a player who's essentially playing for their career. This is a young pitcher who wants to establish himself, wants to put his best foot forward. And if they're going to attack the Padres like a young pitcher or a player, a pitcher that they haven't been familiar with, they're going to have success. And that's unfortunate. It's like, I don't know. And this has been a theme for a long time with this franchise, that they just seem to get victimized by unheralded pitchers that just, I mean, look what Merrill does to them every time he starts from Arizona. I mean, he doesn't have the greatest stuff in the world. He's obviously a above average major league pitcher, but that's someone who adjust. Where's the philosophy? Where's the offensive philosophy? Where's the game plan?
Yeah.
What's going on?
I agree. I mean, there is, like, if there wanted to be a silver lining, I guess, looking at the stats from against the fastball, they did have an XWOBA, expected weighted on base, of 606 against that pitch. They got a little bit unlucky on balls in play.
Okay.
But you still only put up one run. And that's not good enough. That's not going to win you a lot of games. One run is not going to win you a lot of games.
And like we mentioned, after a very important win, just going out stagnant like that just puts this just – the crowd is just like, please do something. Sit somebody on base, steal a base.
And then it's going to be, and we're recording this before game three of the series.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Hendricks has been bad this year. Kyle Hendricks is phenomenal in Petco Park. His career numbers. He is really good and very comfortable in Petco Park.
And see, that's a pitcher who you have to have an approach. You have to look up the middle. You have to take him up the middle away. You cannot try to pull him, because he's going to just eat you alive with his slow and slower pitches. So you have to have an approach. You got to maybe step off the plate a little bit, take him opposite field, take him up the middle, stay on the ball. We'll see what happens today. With this team, they could win 15-0 or they could lose 15-0. And consistency is going to be what makes this team a playoff team. And we'll just have to wait to see if that comes.
Yeah. So for context, last season when Kyle Hendricks pitched in San Diego with the Cubs, 8 2/3, 3 hits, 0 earned runs, 7 strikeouts, 1 walk. Yeah.
See, 7 Ks. You Hendricks is not, he's a pitch to contact guy. You can't.
Case 2022. I'm sorry, but yes, still point remains. 2022.
You cannot K against him. You need to put the ball in play. You got to put the ball. You have to have a game plan. To me, that box score means guys were just swinging out of their shoes, trying to just drive the ball off of him. And that's not a pitcher you drive the ball off. That's a pitcher that you execute and have a game plan against.
I agree. And I hope results are different today. They need a win in a bad way. They haven't won a series yet. And by the way, you meet up with a buzzsaw of the Dodgers in your next series. And you put yourself in very hot water if you lose the series to the Cubs and then you roll to play the Dodgers. That's a dangerous game.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
welcome to Padre fanhood, folks.
Welcome to Padre fanhood. So who knows? But anyway. Well,
good show, though, man. This was a good show, all in all.
I think this was a fantastic show. Again, thank you to Sam Dykstra for joining us today. Very awesome to get his insight. Like James said, keep an eye out on us. We're going to have a couple more guys that do similar work as Sam for some more extra insight. We'll get to some different Padres prospects with those guys just to kind of keep the array around to different names. But a great episode. And hopefully the next time we talk to you, we'll be talking about, the Padres series win against the Cubs. We're all feeling a little better, and we're looking forward to the Dodgers. We'll see how that fares. So, but this has been Padres EVT Podcast. For my co-host, James E. Clark, I am Clark Farenthal. Thank you so much, folks, for joining us, and we will talk to you soon, very, very soon, I hope.